Today we have James Cernog on the channel, and today he said that the movie best relates to his life is The Matrix, the first one. So for the world that don't know, how does this movie relate to your life?
It relates to my life in various symbols. For one, as you guys can remember, Neo, he took the pill. The story ends. And that was a real significant aspect in the movie where I had to sit back now that I look at my life and I say, well, that was for me too, because it was more so like the illusion of the Matrix that he had gotten a understanding that, you know, it's something beyond this. And for me, 2017, when I was at Calipat State Prison, my brother had died. But prior to that, I had already had a notion inside to stop the gang life that I was a part of. I was talking to some of the guys on the yard at North Kern State Prison where I was located at that time in 2015. And I was just telling them, hey, you know, I want to make a change. I want to stop, you know, banging. Some of the guys was like, oh, man, you the homie, you know, but it really hit 2017 when I was at Calipat. The counselor called me out and let me know that my older brother had died. His name was Donald Buehrer. He was from Outlaw 20 Bloods. And that's who I looked up to. You know what I'm saying? That was my hero. That was my everything. He taught me the survival kit of growing up in Los Angeles, California. And, you know, where I eventually start to live my adolescent life in Compton, where I actually became a gang member, joined the Elm Street Power Roof Gang in the neighborhood that I stayed. When I made that decision, because of the lifestyle that I chose, the rules that was governing about that, the Matrix in 2017 reflect when Neo took the pill, it was also me making that decision, because I felt like this lifestyle that I was living and portraying was not the authentic me, because I was looking for love. I was looking for acceptance. I was looking for all these things, but to go and join a gang, it had started to dawn on me, like, why would you do this? Or why is this making sense where these people ain't showing you love? They use you, you know, your kindness is taken for weakness. I have to portray this image that I really didn't want to be no more. Just toughness. It was a mask. A lot of masks that I was putting on, hurting people for no reason, you know, because these are the things that I had to do. And just like when you look at the movie, The Matrix, when Neo started to want to be out of the Matrix, he started to have trauma. He started to have them trying to hurt him. Unfortunately, by the grace of God, I haven't had that since I made that decision while I've been incarcerated. The gang, they allow me to walk away. I don't be involved in any politics. I'm able to live my life as a civilian now, in general population. Some guys, they still, hey, how you doing? You know, they try to acknowledge me because of the respect. I never was disrespectful. I never did anything in that lifestyle that deemed me, you know, a person that doesn't want that respect. But I didn't even want that no more. I don't want that glorification or anything. So that's how much, you know, just insight I wanted to give you on that.
Okay. And for the people that's listening that don't know and ain't seen The Matrix, the movie is about a guy who is a computer programmer by day and a hacker by night that goes under the alias Neo.
Right.
Now, in the beginning, Neo always felt an eerie feeling of this outer world existence that was contrary to his own, but he didn't know no better. And even still, his perspective of what's real was a false reality. Until he was taken through a series of events where it exposed the truth to him. And only due to his choices along the way that he opened up more to the truth and stepped into his own truth. You know what I'm saying? And became who he was actually meant to be, where no longer was external forces controlling or dictating his mindset. He became not only the one, but one with himself. So, boom. With that in mind, you talked about living a false identity. And that aligns with Neo in the beginning.
Yes, sir.
Before you took the red pill, talk about like what made you put on that mask in the first place? What compelled you?
I want to say more so just me, my childhood lifestyle, growing up in group homes and foster homes. I wasn't fortunate like most kids to grow up with a mother and father in their home. I was taken away and placed in a foster home due to the system deeming my mother unfit mother at the time. As you can see, I have a scar on my face. So after this incident that took place where I got burnt on my face, I was placed in the system and foster home and group home. So
sorry to interrupt, but what age was that?
I want to say I was a child, bro. Just from the stories that my family and them told me, I never can sit here and say that I actually remember, but I know I was taken at a very young age. I want to say 15 months at least.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, because I was born in 82. This happened like around 83, my scar, and I'm 42 now. So this was a long time ago. Just asking stories. My sister, Demia Brewer, that's my older sister. She kind of like pretty much informs me about certain things that I don't remember about my child life. But to get back on course, yes, just growing up in group homes and foster homes, bro, being bullied as a kid, being teased about this scar, something that I didn't come to a full realization until I got therapy from me having so many fights when I was in junior high, elementary. Then they requested that I see a therapist, and the therapist basically said, "Do you know what's going on with you?" "No, I just have people talking about me." "Why are they talking about you, James?" "They saying I'm ugly, or they say a scar on my face." And it didn't dawn on me, because as a kid I didn't think about that. I felt like I looked like you, but you know, in all actuality I have a distinctive look. It wasn't taught to me. You know, I was, like I said, in these foster homes and group homes. And no one set me down and said, "Hey, look, James, you have a distinctive look on your face. You have a scar." So kids were kids at that time. So I've been getting bullied all my life, man. And it just taught me, you know, just to be defensive. And I was standing in this one foster home. And I remember my foster mom nephews would toughen me up. You know, they would also say, "Hey, that little boy down the street talking about your face." And it would, you know, fester inside of me to go down there and do something about it. So, that's pretty much where I got this whole aggression, you know what I'm saying? I wanted to defend myself because people were talking about my face, bro.
Okay. And what sparked, like, was it infatuation to get into the gang life, or was you pushed into it or pulled into it?
For me, being raised around it, like, so, even though I was in a foster home, you know, my foster mom nephews and them, you know, they did the things in the '80s, sold drugs, gang. It was highly invested at that time. And then just meeting my brother, my older brother, someone who I could connect to. He was a well-known member at that time from 20 Outlaw Bloods. And, you know, just wanting that acceptance from my big brother, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is something that I can call my own. This is my big brother. This is who I can look up to. And again, there was an incident where I was walking in the Crenshaw Mall with him, and we were walking, and every time somebody would walk, I would like move out the way, right? And so him at that time, he's full-fledged, he like pulled me to the side like, "Hey bro, when somebody walk past you, bumped him, they're like, throw your shoulder out of him, don't let nobody, you know." And so that right then, I did it. You know, next time somebody walked by, I bumped my chest. You know, I pushed over my shoulder out to him, and he was like, "What?" He turned around, looked at the dude like, "What?" You know, he had a gun on him, whatever. So I felt like, you know, my hero right here, I'm going to show out. Wow. So that gave me my spinach like Popeye. It was like, it was on, you know. And then I didn't want no one else to try to think that they could, you know, run over me or stuff like that. He gave me my tools to survive for at that point in my life. You know what I'm saying? It was okay. Just because of what he was taught. You know, it was a survival kit that he was taught just out being in the jungle, meaning the streets and the world as a young man. And that was, to me, now that I look at it, it kind of like sparked a negative, you know, vibe for me, where I took it and ran with it, you know?
Right. And I want to piggyback what you said, the environment you grew up in, because we are talking about the Matrix, which is the same similar thing. And it's like the tools that we use to identify reality, you know, say our sensory system, our sight, our smell, what we see, what we feel, like that makes up our reality. But it's deep because when you lack information as a child and you're undeveloped, even your experiences can deceive you.
Right, for sure.
And it's interesting because they say experience is the best teacher, but it's like when you're lacking information, when you're uninformed, even your experiences can deceive you. You know?
Yeah,
And
true.
it's like when you think of that, or when I think of that, all I knew was the hood myself, you know, growing up on the east side of Long Beach and it being both inside and outside my household. So the fact that I lack so much information, like my immediate reality became my worldview. But I deceived myself because I thought when I even every time I branched out, life was always like this. It was always like that when really it wasn't. You know what I'm saying? So when you think of that, like, what was exactly, like, describe to us your red pill moment that you found out everything wasn't what it was cracked up to be in your mind.
Again, in 2017, my brother died. You know, just looking at all the things that I had to go through, the fear, knowing that this lifestyle that I chose and believed in for so long, that at the end of the day, I could have been hurt because of the choices that I was making to leave from this gang. Like, as you see in Neo, when he took the red pill and his reality became like, no, this is out. Like, they started to want to kill him. They started to want to do things to him. And again, by the grace of God, that I haven't had that triumph of you know, experience with thus far, you know, in my walk and even with me being incarcerated. But it felt scary, bro. You know, I had to rely on God, and that's one thing that I did. I just said, you know, God, if this is what you have for me, which is something better to uplift me. It brought me out of that illusion to say, hey, this is not the authentic James. This is not who I am. This is what I wasn't here on this earth to do. And so now, you know, I'm here to see what my purpose is now, is to uplift people and to give back to the youth and let them know that the same mistakes that I made in my life and that illusion that is out there for them, because of their environment, is not who they have to be. You know what I'm saying? The environment that they're succumbed to. Because, like you said, the lack of information, and now developing information and understanding the necessities and tools that I've been able to teach myself, even with being in college and getting an education and just having a better thinking. You know, I think it starts from my thought process of wanting to change my thoughts. That's was a big thing for my red pill moment too.
And I want to piggyback. You leaving it in the hands of God despite your fear. And I think to walk in that is a difference between thinking and knowing. You know what I'm saying? To think that there is a God and that he is all of these, or she is all of these attributes that you give him or her, but to know it. You know what I'm saying? And to walk in that despite the fear. And I believe I can piggyback the scene in the Matrix when Morpheus took Neo to his first simulation when they fought. You know? And he was doing all this thinking that he's fast, that he's strongest. And Morpheus said, don't think you are, know you are.
No,
You know what I'm saying? So for the people that's listening, you gotta know that you are what you think you're capable of.
yes, sir.
You gotta know that the value that is embedded in your name. You got to know that life is better off with you in it, you know, or however you're trying to exist in this world. So for you, James, what is some things that you know for sure now about yourself that you didn't know prior or only thought you knew until you started knowing?
Okay, so that's a great question. And for me, man, I realized that I'm a loving person. I'm a giving person. I like to laugh, you know. I like to play sports. That was one thing that I did. I'm a God-fearing person. You know what I'm saying? I know that me telling my story or me talking to a person can help someone out. You know, I've helped a lot of people by just talking to them and not knowing that just my presence or my story alone, or just me being authentic, meaning that I'm not putting on Peanut, I'm putting on James. And just that person alone in itself, I didn't know that that was enough for certain people who were going through what they were going through in their life. Mm-hmm. Just me expressing or being authentic, telling them my truth about my mom being on drugs all my life, or I'm the sixth out of 12, I mean, 11 kids that my mom had, you know, now that my brother's deceased. But, you know, just those things. And when a person really get to know me, I learned how to be vulnerable, because, you know, I was living under this illusion of having so many masks, so I can't be telling nobody how I feel or stuff like that. But just coming in tune with knowing who I am, knowing that, you know, I can be vulnerable, that I am a loving person, that I am a caring person. And again, just educating myself, bro. I didn't know how to read, you know what I'm saying? Or I didn't believe I knew how to read. I was one of those kids that when it was time for me to read in class, I would act up so that the light won't shine on me. But just having that confidence now, you know, with re-educating myself, bro, and going to college. I just finished with a 3.7 at Antelope Valley College this year. And, you know, just having that confidence that my sister, my older sister, her name is Demia Brewer, she instilled that in me. But again, I lost that confidence because I didn't have a proper foundation. She had always been in my life telling me, because she had accomplished a lot of education in her life, you know, she had becoming a doctor, working with kids now. So she wanted that for the rest of her brothers and sisters. But again, not having that real foundation of stability, household, living with her every day, you know, I was out doing my thing, man, and I just lacked of information and also just having the confidence. I have that confidence now that no one can take away from me, you know, just being incarcerated for over these amount of years and just telling myself, you know, like you said, I'm more now to the world than I was back then at 23. I'm 42 now. I've started a nonprofit organization in here called From My Eyes to Your Eyes. And my whole function of that is to give back to the youth, to give back to the adolescents, the young men and women and single parent mothers out there, you know, just teaching them about generational trauma, teaching them about, you know, financial stability, financial literacy. And that's what my nonprofit organization want to do. And just let the youth know that, hey, just because you're going through those things, and that's why I came up with the title From My Eyes to Your Eyes, letting them know that, hey, yes, I'm 42 years old. I went through that stuff. And there's other people like yourself. And, you know, there's a lot of other nonprofit organizations or just groups out there that are trying to foster to the things that we grew up with.
Right. And what that's great. And what I also hear is you're using vulnerability and humility in a way that benefits you finally at this stage in your life. Because as kids, we are often vulnerable and impressionable as well, but it's used in a negative way. So now it's like with the movie with Neo, the attributes of being vulnerable, you have to be open to something that contradicts what you believe internally. You know what I'm saying? You have to be willing to ask for help. You have to be willing to admit when you're wrong. You know what I'm saying? So it's like these things lead, that it waters your seed and allows you to grow. So what are some other aspects that you are using vulnerability to help you grow?
Some of them are just some of the ones you talked about, sir. Again, I was a prideful person. I didn't want to ask for help, though I had a lot of resources. Just growing up like that, you know, being alone in group homes and foster homes and doing things on my own, it was like I was already in the belly of the beast, meaning that, you know, a survival kit, meaning that I didn't grow up with no brothers and sisters on my side. I grew up with dudes that were in, you know, predicaments worse than me, or they were, you know, just unfortunately didn't have the right foundation or structure family-wise, so the system put us all together in this cesspool. So one thing for me, man, is that my humility, man, just my relationship with God, ultimately, I have to really bring that to the forefront. If it wasn't for him and me answering to him, bro, I think I would have been in a destructive mind state. I lost my mother also in 2019, and my brother, I lost him in 2017 since I've been incarcerated. And you have people that pass away, but when I never had no one in my immediate, like my father passed in 98. I was in high school, so I was in society for that. And that was another pivotal point for my life where, I kind of like didn't care no more, because it's like, dang, my dad, I met him when I was 16. He died at 17. And I loved that relationship that he and I had. It was cool. Even though he had not been in my life for all those years, when I met him, it seemed like we was like tight. Plus, I'm his junior. So, he told me, explained to me, the upbringing and what his story was, him and my mom. But I just felt like it was still genuine, and I have that about me, about my father. He was a genuine person. I'm not selfish anymore. I know how to be transparent, fully. I know how to communicate well, because at first I didn't know how. My communication was violence or not talking at all. So just knowing how to open my mouth now and say to someone, like you said, hey, I'm sorry. I deal with these things even with my sisters and brothers today, just being incarcerated and looking at their life and tell them, hey, why y'all doing this? They say I'm more so like a ah, but it's because I see it. And you guys are, they're out there, but they don't get the opportunity for me to sit back, get the healing, get the proper training in these classes. They don't see what I see because I'm looking from the outside in. So I'm able to give better perspectives, and their perspectives is that, oh, we're out here in society and you're not. It's hard out here.
So yeah, I want to touch on, you try to give your family insight, but yet they're saying like you're not out here. And I want people to understand that sometimes it takes somebody on the outside looking in to give insiders insight on what's outside of their purview. You know what I'm saying? And going to the movie, Morpheus, when he it was that scene with the lady with the red dress. And Morpheus said that people are so dependent on whatever reality or system that's there, that when somebody comes out and challenge it, they fight against them so they can stay in that. But to add to that, I want to enlighten people to the Plato's cave, the ancient Greek philosopher, Plato, right? And when you talk about Plato's allegory or Plato's cave, it was people who had to live in this cave, and all they knew was their reality was the shadows on the wall. And that made up their reality. When that rare individual made it out and told them, like, hold on, it's something different out here, like, they fought against them. Because they was comfortable in that reality. This movie, for people that don't know, is really talking about, it's a social critique for the capitalist society that we're in. It's really talking about corporations, AI, marketing agencies, ad, and all these things that influence the way that we behave in this world. But me and James right now, we're bringing it even closer to the concrete and talking about the social issues, the community, the culture, and all these things. So, James, when you think about the movie overall, what do you think is the underlying message of the whole movie based on where we come from?
So for where we come from, being, like you say, you grew up in Long Beach. I grew up in Compton, LA, just various of different areas in LA because of me growing up in the group homes and foster homes. So I think the narrative for a young man like myself coming up, the way I came up, just because I got money and cars and all that's what it is. It's not. Some people kill themselves and they have all that. We've seen that. And it's about peace, bro. It's about just having a relationship, having an understanding about who you are and what your purpose here on this earth. And I think I found that.
Most people out there believe that the highest form of achieving is being the puppet master that's dangling the shadows in front of people that in that cave. And so what do you say to that?
In some cases, I believe that's true, bro.
All right.
Because when you look at some of the things that the youth are out there chasing, that they're out there looking at, it's because of what the content that they're looking at, social media, things on TV, TMZ, the news. and they try to perpetuate the same behavior. They want the cars. They want to see when they put out there on the news. I was looking the other day how they were showing about people running in the stores. So you get this notion and this idea to think, well, they did it, I can do it. You know what I'm saying? So, and then there's no proper home training in homes. Now you got parents that are in their 30s trying to still socialize with their kids coming up. So there's no foundation, bro. There's no teaching of what's right and what's wrong because of the outlets of all the social media platforms. Some people use them for negativity. One thing I was telling my sister one day about my niece is that she would never understand how it feels to, like how you felt like our mom was on drugs, because you're not on drugs. She would never understand how it feels to take care of her siblings because you're her only daughter. She would never know how it feels to walk around with hand-me-down clothes or anything like that because you've already depicted a life established for her to have her own room where she has her own bathroom in her own room. How many 13-year-old kids have that in the house where she lives in a gated community? So she would never understand your troubles. She would understand. She would never understand how you was for you had to walk this mile because you work at her school. So you can't depict that on her. You have to now try to channel in, which the society is, she has all these outlets now, social media. I talked to my sister, she said she don't even talk to her. She's always on her phone. I said, well, that's because of this, the norm in which she's living in. You know, it's more so like that puppeteer, like you said. They have all these things for kids to be more so interested in, more so than bringing it back old school, where they didn't have none of that. We were outside. You know, I was outside as a kid. I played on skateboards. We played hide and go get it. We did all the crazy stuff as kids, but we was outside. We wasn't just stuck in the house. They didn't make it like that. But this new era of kids, man, is crazy.
Yeah. Now it seemed like a punishment to tell them go outside. That became a punishment now.
They don't want to go outside. Yeah. Yeah, they be like, go outside. Right. I can FaceTime if they go outside. I can FaceTime anybody. You know, it's crazy, bro.
Right.
And just being here so long, and just even now, like in prison, just being able to do this, bro, it's going to blow my mind when I get out there because, like, it's like now I'm going into the Matrix, coming out of the Matrix, going into the Matrix with all this new technology. I'm going to be walking into the Matrix after doing 18 years in prison now. You know what I'm saying? It didn't happen. Like, I got to get reacclimated to everything now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. But like Neo... Like Neo, when he was able to get snatched up out of that and allowed himself to develop, you know what I'm saying, outside of that, to where by time he, every time he kept going back in, he was himself.
He was himself, yeah. And so, they didn't like that. Yeah,
yeah, so like now that you was able to be outside of that while all this took place and develop who you are, to know who you are and walk in your truth, you can go back in it and not be corrupt by it.
Right, not being dependent on it. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
that was a powerful conversation. And, you know, one of the elements of a great story is that there's a point being made. You know what I'm saying? Yes, sir. Like,
yes, sir.
There's something that underscores everything that we're talking about. So what's the point that you're trying to make by telling your story right now?
My point that I'm trying to tell, man, is pretty much do all the adversities, all the pitfalls and wrong choices that I made, and some undecisive choices, which I didn't know what choice I was making. I was making it off impulse, that there's still a ending to everyone's road. You have to find yours, and you got to get on that path and know that that's just for you. It's not for the next person. It's not for the individuals who you committed yourself to, or like for me, the gang. But you have to take control of your life and find out what that is. So my message and my point that I'm making is to let people know, man, that, you know, it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to change and not worry about what the next person thinks about you. And for so many years, that's what I was thinking, that, you know, if I did make this change because of the internal work that I was doing, Will someone now look at me different because I see now the truth? And when God gave me the truth, I had to speak it, no matter if it was for the next person or not. I still just had to speak it. You could be a pimp, all you gotta do is have her mind, and you can lead the bitch. Brainwashed by the six, but then with self-imposed limitations, trying to hit this home run before we load the bases. Never had no patience. All my partners died young, and yet and still we emulated examples that they died from. I want to give a shout out also to Straight Off the Boulevard, like yourself, Mast of a Dying Seed, L7, you know what I'm saying? You guys are doing a great job. You guys are out there motivating me in here to get out there to participate in the movement of trying to give back to our youth, teach our youth what we didn't know. But now that we have it, now it's time for us to give back to them. And that's what I truly want to do, even with my nonprofit organization, From My Eyes to Your Eyes. How can a fruit grow healthy if it's a rotten tree?